Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by my co-host, Michael.
How's it going?
It's going well, man. It's going well. I broke my glasses, so, you know, you get to see this fresh face. But other than that, it's going pretty well. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I did not break my glasses. I do not have glasses.
It's easier not to break them when you don't have them.
I feel like more broadly applied, that's just a way of life.
Yeah, it's kind of like the whole you miss all the shots you don't take kind of thing. Like,
right.
You don't break all the glasses you don't have.
Hopefully. I mean, unless you're breaking other people's glasses, but, you know,
that's
then
like
having other problems.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. Well, let's this week, it's not about glasses. It's actually about standard. This week we're going to talk about our week one evaluations of AlmanCat Standard, and we're really excited to get to talk to you about kind of where the format is today, going forward. You know, there's going to be 2 weeks before the Pro Tour, and we'll have a lot of things that we get to talk to you about when that comes. But we kind of want to break down like what happened at the SEG and give you guys a deep dive for week one. So
definitely, there was some pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, there was. Unfortunately, we don't get to talk about any of the interesting stuff. No, we can't. I'm just kidding. So during the first part of the show, we always invite the patrons of the show, the people who pay us to do this, to ask a question. This week, we have a question from Adrian who says, how do you evaluate tournament results so that you can learn from them and prepare for your next event? Sorry, I need to preface this. I said it wrong. How do you evaluate your tournament results?
Oh, okay. So like, That's interesting. That is different than what I had read that as well. Evaluating your own tournament results, I think a lot of the time comes down to maybe if you want to learn from them and prepare for your next event, you want to sort of eliminate the games that felt like outliers. I think making sure to put the focus kind of on how you're playing rather than just whether you're winning or losing, that would be the first thing.
Yeah, this weekend I had a sealed PPTQ that I went to, and I did a lot of preparation for it. I was playing sealed at night with people. I went to our draft camp on Thursday and just really prepared. And I sat down with my sealed pool, and I was able to build, I think, the best deck that I could out of my pool. I didn't lose a match inside the Swiss with a deck that honestly like wasn't that good. But because I had all that preparation, I was able to win all those matches, get into top eight. I dressed a really reasonable deck. And give myself a pretty good chance to win the event. And it's really easy to get caught up in the fact that either I top eighted the event or I didn't win the event. They're like kind of these two extremes that you can get sucked into, right? Where instead I can be like, I did really well in the sealed portion because of my preparation. And then in the draft portion, I need to evaluate like, how did I do in draft? And just evaluate different pieces of the event rather than evaluating the results of the event, right? So the question here is, how do you evaluate your tournament results? And I actually think that's just the wrong approach to take.
I think you're trying to find why, right? So like, if you say, okay, well, I think sealed went pretty well. So why did it go well? Because I just opened a pool that was great. Or
it was not great.
Oh, right. Or did I just avoid disaster at least and build a deck that could win matches of Magic? And I think that a lot of the time, kind of making those sort of distinctions, and then in draft, you know, so were there cards that you thought were better than they were? Did you miss opportunities in the drafting portion? Or did you just play against someone who had a much better deck than you did?
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that, like, when I look back on Sunday, I think on my preparation for sealed and for draft went really well. It was pretty good. I was able to prepare myself in a really, honestly, great way. Through all of the testing that I did. And that's pretty important. And then the next step is like then going to the next step. So preparation is the first thing you do for a Magic event. So you need to evaluate that. Then you can go into individual games or individual plays and sequencing and excuse me, and evaluate yourself on that level.
I think that's really well said. I think just kind of in the end, to sum it up, just making sure that we're avoiding being really results oriented and that we're looking more at like, where did we make choices and how were those choices good or bad? And that comes down to preparation, for constructed deck selection, you know, actually building out your 75 and then playing the games. And I think if you can, you know, make an effort to improve a little bit at a time in any one of those areas, really, you will get better a lot more quickly than you would otherwise.
Yeah. Yep. I think that is the best way to go about it. Rather than looking at the results and evaluating from there, you know, there are going to be times where you're going to win events that you probably didn't deserve to win. Like, a lot of them. And that is an important thing to think about, right? Like, when I qualified for the Pro Tour, my opponent probably, like, hit 7 lands off the top in a row in that match that qualified me for the Pro Tour. Did I deserve to win that match, right? And that's, like, the thing is, you can't take your end result into account because there are factors that go into your end result that you are in control of. You have to only evaluate the things that you are doing.
It also depends, right? Like, if I'm playing a GPT, I don't know that I especially care how I get there. Right? Like, if I want buys, sure. I mean, great.
I'm sure he didn't take his result into consideration as how his deck played out or how he played Magic, right?
Sure, but which is what I'm saying is. Too, right? So what I would say, more than like these don't ever count together. Sometimes they count together. Sometimes they get really split, right? Sometimes right. We're just like, yeah, forget this. I played bad, but hey, I got 2 buys, or hey, my opponent was really unlucky, and this time it happened to qualify me for a Pro Tour. That's, you know,
sure.
I'm not going to complain about it too much, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I made a lot of bad plays in that finals match of that RBDQ. But I made a lot of good plays to get me to that match. So it's kind of like you have to evaluate where you can improve and things like that. And clearly I need to improve where I could under pressure. And that's kind of what I took away from that event, right? Is I need to practice being better under pressure because I did really well getting up to the point of getting to the elimination round. So I hope that answered your question, Adrian. And thank you so much for submitting it. We really appreciate it. So don't forget to check out the sponsor of this podcast at Oasis Games. You go to oasisgamesslc.com. You can go to mtgoasis.com. Get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood with no spaces at checkout. And it really is the best deal on Magic cards anywhere. Like, if you haven't ordered from there before and you get that 15% off, it's going to be a huge chunk of change.
Yeah. I mean, Magic cards are basically commodity priced for the most part. It's kind of the same almost no matter where you buy them from price wise. So getting that back is a really big deal. It's not the kind of thing that is easy to get elsewhere. You're probably not going to find Channel Fireball or Star City giving that kind of price. So
yeah. And honestly, they are opening a new location as well, which is really exciting. So if you are a local to Utah, look forward to that in the next couple of months as they open a possible new location. So, we actually need to take a break because my phone is blowing up and I think it might be my wife. All right, we're back. I'm so sorry. That is completely my fault. I didn't know that button would just end the video. So now we know. Now, you know, knowing is half the battle. So, wife is fine, in case anyone's wondering. Let's move on to our next segment, which is #AlwaysImproving. #AlwaysImproving is the point of this show. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we always want to be doing what we can to improve. So every week we challenge ourselves to come up with something that we're doing to get better at Magic and then share that with our listeners. Because, like, I mean... it doesn't matter like where we're at. There's always room to improve, right? I mean, Michael, if you had gotten platinum this year, that wouldn't change, right?
Well, I mean, I think the secret is even if you're doing well at something, you have to keep working at it, right? It's not like you can't just like magically maintain without trying. That would be cool. That would make life a lot easier, but
yeah. So, Michael, what have you done this week to try and improve at Magic?
I have been just grinding away at standard, mostly trying to figure out what I like in this format, looking at results from this weekend, just trying a bunch of different stuff, trying to be helpful to those around me who are going to this Pro Tour, and just playing, plugging away at it. What about you, Spencer?
So I kind of mentioned this earlier. So I had my second weekend from PPTQ since getting back. So last season I played in 3 PPTQs, and I had a weekend where I top 8-2, lost in both of them, And then the next weekend, I won one. And then this weekend, I had another one of those weekends where I top 8 two PPDQs and lose. And the thing is that I haven't lost a match of Swiss Magic in PPDQs in like 8 months. Maybe longer than that. And I'm having a really hard time finding where to improve, because it feels so automatic. And then it's like this very short-lived thing once you get into those elimination rounds. So I'm really trying to focus on like, what did I do wrong that didn't get me there? Even if it's maybe too abstract. So I got a little bit mana strewed on Sunday, and on Saturday, I don't know that I could have won the match, but there's still things that I like need to think about. So like my mindset going into the top 8, like, do I feel like a lock to win? Like, even if I don't think it or say it out loud, like, is there something in the back of my mind that is maybe preventing me from like keeping solid hands and just like trying to find areas to improve when I'm not losing matches of Magic in the Swiss, or even like finding areas in the Swiss where I could even improve more and lose and not lose any games, right? And it's just a weird feeling that I haven't had in Magic before, because typically when you get to this point that I'm at, you start to plateau where like, so I'm pretty confident I'm going to win a PPTQ again, and I have an RPTQ coming up. So like, where do I need to improve to give myself the best shot to win any individual event or a string of events? And it's kind of a weird feeling, because I don't think that I've taken Magic this seriously since adopting this mindset. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. I think a lot of it comes down to like not even the kind of mistakes that break games open for your opponent, or, you know, keeping hands that can't possibly function, but just finding little marginal things to do, right? Like just making sure that you're really sequencing things correctly, because you can make all kinds of small mistakes that like realistically aren't going to regularly cost you matches, but still add up and at least give your better opponents more percentage points against you.
Yeah. I think that, you know, as I look for things, you know, whether it's, you know, maybe I could have practiced with my deck more. I definitely could have had a different sideboard. So like, that's the conclusion I came through on the Sunday event. It was like, oh man, my sideboard was definitely built incorrectly. I definitely could have play tested more and come up with a better sideboard plan for individual matchups. And, you know, I gave a tip about writing your own sideboard guide. That way you at least understand what cards you need and what matchups and like where your sideboard lies. And I think I would have found flaws in my sideboard had I done that. And I think that's pretty important, and something that, you know, just finding the places to improve is really the first step. And I want to get better at finding those places to improve all the time.
To be fair, some of that stuff, especially with sideboarding, is also a little bit tougher early in a format. Like, you're just less sure what cards you're going to play against, what matchups you expect, right?
Right, but if I'm going to look, like, I have to be a little nitpicky if I'm going to, like, always look for something to improve on, right?
Sure. No, so. I just mean that I think is a really challenging part of early format play in general. It's very tricky to build correct sideboards at any point, but when you're not even sure what you're playing against, it is a lot rougher.
Yeah, like I had Kozilek's Return that I just didn't need in the deck at all in the 75, and it just occupied the wrong space. And then I also didn't have enough board outs against control. So either I had too much to board in, or I didn't have enough to board out, or I just needed a more solid plan against it versus play and draw. So it's just things to think about. So let's move on to our next segment, which is Power Rankings. We have no card of the week or deck doctor this week. Those are segments that are given to our patrons. Deck doctor is if you're a patron of $5 or more, you can submit a deck in the Constructed Critics Facebook group for the deck doctor segment, and we will talk about it on the show and break down the deck and give you some advice on it. Card of the week is a segment we try and do as often as possible. We actually just give out Magic cards. I didn't want to give out Magic cards this week because it would have gone to Mardu Vehicles cards. And that didn't sound fun, so we're not doing it.
That's great.
And I'm the decision maker, so nobody gets Mardu Vehicles cards.
It's good to have the power.
Yeah, exactly. Don't need more of those in the world. let's go right into our power rankings. So every week on the show, we do like to break down the format and give you guys kind of a snapshot look at the best decks that are performing by the numbers, not just what we think the best decks are. We actually want to tell you, like, what do the numbers say you need to be prepared for to win a given match of a given tournament of Magic. And so coming in tied, this actually wouldn't have been a tie. I shouldn't even have Green Black Aggro on this list. If we actually include the entire top 64 like I'm supposed to and give those half points, then Jeskai Control would actually come in at number 5. Green Black Aggro and Jeskai Control come tied with 3 points, but Jeskai would actually end up probably coming in 4th place, overtaking some of the other decks if we included top 64, which makes sense when you think about where the format sits and the fact that, like, it's really hard to get your configuration of control decks correct. That's just more difficult for the deck to break through. So the fact that it had so many in the top 64 is actually a good thing.
Definitely. I mean, these decks also struggled a little bit with Mardu before. I would say the pure control decks had a better matchup against, like, the 4-color Saheeli variants than they did against Mardu. So it's not super surprising to me that, especially with people a little unsure on exactly how to build them, they did fine because the cards are good, but maybe weren't the absolute best choice for the weekend.
Right. I mean, they certainly tried their darndest. And I think that you have to remember that a lot of these points would be taken away from people trying to do blue-red or stuff like that as well. Well, the black-green deck is a deck that I actually expected to do better than it did. I actually expected snake decks to really try and take advantage of Mardu. And I actually wonder if those points got taken away somewhere and people just weren't willing to play the deck because of its past history of, like, starting to lose to Jeskai Saheeli. Because, honestly, I think the deck is probably okay, at least.
I think it's fine. I think a lot of it comes down to just the fact that it had felt kind of like by the end of the last format, like Mardu had sort of cracked the
code on it
a little bit. And I think in general, like, playing the snake theme deck, you just get locked into so many cards that you have some flex slots, but, like, ultimately it's a difficult deck to completely overhaul. I just doubt it's where people put in the most time.
One thing to think about that somebody put in the chat is, you know, there were not very many days to prepare for this event. So, you know, Michael talked about his equity of time last week. And, like, when you're preparing for an event, like, where do you spend your time preparing? And a lot of that probably went into, I'm just going to play Mardu Vehicles because I have 2 days to prepare.
Yeah, I think that's some of it. I also think that, like, a lot of it is just, if you're going to put time into a deck, if green black is just the deck you're going to play, I think it's a fine deck. But if I have choices, I don't think this is where I want to be right now. I just don't think your Mardu matchup is really that good. And there was no reason to expect this tournament to be anything but a bunch of Mardu.
Yeah. White Red Humans comes in next with 4 points just from that top four. Honestly, I've played a lot of humans decks leading up to this event, and I'm honestly just not that impressed. I would much rather be mono red or black red than white red almost any of the time.
Yeah, it looks like he played Aether Hub over Needle Spires, which, you know, is great until you draw two of them. Or until you draw Honored Crop Captain ever.
Yeah, I think that this deck is not in the position of winning many more games. And I think that, honestly, the fact that Tom Ross did not end up on a deck like this does speak volumes about, you know, just humans, because I know he tested humans. So I think that speaks more volumes than the top four does.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the kind of deck where, like, if it decides it likes you, you're going to do great. But yeah. I don't want to play 5 basic mountains in my town gossip monger Thraben Inspector. Like, I don't know. I'm playing, what, 12 white ones? I'm playing 5 mountains and 4 Aether Hubs and a Hanware Battlements. I don't know. That just feels so sketchy to me.
For a guy that played Mardu Vehicles at a Pro Tour, I feel like you shouldn't be one to complain about bad mana.
Okay, so the thing is that at least Mardu has upside. Like, I feel like if you really curve out with this deck really well, you come close to the power level of Mardu Vehicles. but are still below it. And I think the mana might actually be worse in this deck.
When you think about how you had to solve, like, think about like Protor Kaladesh, right? To solve Mardu Vehicle's mana problems, you actually had to go to four colors.
Right. So I think Mardu Vehicle's, the mana is sort of unintuitively better than it looks. And likewise, I would say that the mana in this deck, like, you look at the spells and you're like, oh, I should be able to play all these in the same deck. And then you try to actually build a mana base and it's really hard.
I mean, two color decks in general are just really hard to build with. And I mean, when you're on an eight plains, five mountain, I cannot
believe he played a Hanwar Battlements in this deck. That is insane.
Not only did he play it, he almost flipped a Hanwar Garrison.
I mean, that would be sweet. I'm not saying it wouldn't. This mana, when you're trying to play a two-color deck and you decide you can't play any tap lands, it's really tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we're just, and maybe Wizards wants it this way, but we're just not in a point where I'm often very comfortable playing aggressive two-color decks. And that's actually one of the reasons that I think that I've liked Mono Red over this, for the most part. Like, I Mono Red has just felt good because I could just always cast my spells when I wanted to.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. I've tried a bunch of things like this in the not so distant past, and I don't know, mana is just super clunky. Like, playing Aether Hub in a deck like this should make you nervous.
Yeah,
There just aren't that many colorless mana symbols, right?
Yep. Coming in next, we have Marvel with 5 points. You know, I think that this deck, a lot of people think this is the biggest winner of the weekend. I don't know that that's true, but the fact that there are people doing this again and having results with it does speak to the format a little bit, because I don't think a lot of people are willing to put their eggs in the Marvel basket. So as far as like played versus did well with, this deck probably did really well.
Well, there are a bunch of different ways to build this too. Just like looking at the 13th place list versus the 15th place list. The 13th place list is basically like, it looks really close to almost like a Dynavolt control deck where then you just cut the counter spells for Marvel and Ulamog, essentially.
Which is just way better. You don't need to counter their spells. You can just exile them once they're in play.
Sure. Yeah, but I mean, then there's another list with like Bounty of the Luxa and Whirler Virtuosos and Servants and Planeswalkers. And then there's another list.
The list you just talked about, that 15th place list, is actually one of the friends of our patron, Oliver. So he actually shared the list with me before the top 16, and I got to discuss it with some people. And Bounty actually seems quite insane in the deck, making me, somebody who plays Marvel, wanting to maybe go more towards Worldbreaker, because I have like a two-pronged attack at that point.
It kind of makes sense. Like, I can get meta games in which that would look appealing, but there are a whole bunch of approaches to this deck that I think there's another list that's playing Elder Deep Fiends, and there's another list in the top 64 I know that was playing like 4 cast out, 4 sensor, some other, like, kind of almost a blue-white control approach. I believe it was Zansaid at 39th, who's playing, like, it's cast out Sensor Aether Meltdown. So it's about exactly what you want to play, but different ways to build this deck that could be appealing in different meta games.
Yeah, one thing that I do want to say is there was a direct correlation between the color combinations in these decks and how well they did. Teemer did significantly better than the Fumigate versions of the deck. And I would encourage people to not, I mean, we tried a lot of Fumigate versions of Marvel as a team and it never worked out. I would just encourage people to stay away from that. It's just not what the deck is trying to do.
All I'm really saying is whatever you think is best, there are a ton of ways to build. Like, exact card choices even within similar color combinations. Like, there's just a lot of, in terms of what you want your game plan to look like.
Yeah. Coming in with 6 points, we have Green-Black Delirium. This deck is, in my opinion, this is the biggest winner from the weekend. I think that it solidified itself as a real deck again, and Ishkanah played a huge role in that because of how well that card is positioned against Mardu vehicles.
Yeah, so I thought this tech was a big winner. I'm curious to see going forward, like, to do, but hadn't really quite gotten around to, was messing around with main decking either Scarab Feast or Dissenter's Deliverance in some number. Is compared to like some of the other removal spells, I think they might actually be both better against both Mardu and control, Dissenter's Deliverance in particular. But with Cut to Ribbons sort of single-handedly obliterating these green-black decks in the matches I saw this weekend, sort of doing a Key to the City impression where, you know, you'd stabilize with an Ishkanah and then die. I don't know. There's a lot of questions, I think, for how exactly you build black green going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested by your comment because when I saw the matchup, when I was watching, I think I saw two black green decks beat Mardu on camera.
So I think that you like, but if you just look at how the results played out, it's pretty clear that in this event, Mardu was beating black green.
Mardu comes in with 28 points, but I actually don't think that you can take those points and have a direct correlation for how well the deck is positioned, because I actually think that a huge percentage of the field just played Mardu.
I think that's true to some extent, but I do think that I saw Cuts for Urbans do some work for Andrew Jessup a couple of times. I know Todd Anderson was complaining about that as well.
He's a huge fan of the card, and rightfully so. I'm not saying the card is not great. I mean, before the show, I told you it was one of my favorite cards in the set, but I don't know that it.
Yeah, no, and I mean,
in a decklist is going to, excuse me, make me believe that it flopped a good matchup into a bad matchup with just two of.
I don't think so. It just makes me consider how you want to build black green going forward.
Sure.
There are a bunch of black green variants too. There are some playing Torrential Gearhulk and the new bigger Liliana along with a bunch of vessels. The lists are kind of all over the place right now. So I know Matt played a list with Cast Out that we worked on together this weekend that I think he was reasonably happy with.
I also played Matt's list. I was really happy with it. I actually want to take a step back because I'm not one to not go and find out if I'm wrong. So while you were talking, I actually pulled up the data. And there were twice as many Mardu decks as black green decks, but the deck did four times, or three times better. Three times better. No, it did four times better. So,
well, you also get rewarded more heavily for like top heavy finishes. I'm mainly right. I mean, like winning the event and being in both the decks being in the finals, sort of. But if you just look at like the top 25, it looks like has. I'm just going by pages, but I think has one black green delirium deck and a bunch of Mardu decks. And if you click into the next page, there are a bunch of black green delirium decks. So just thinking about how that played out, it looks like
And it could be
they didn't do quite as well over the course of the entire event.
It could be a week one problem, but it also could be a Cut to Ribbons problem. So it's something we'll definitely have to think about.
And I think some of that can just be mitigated by exactly how you build a deck, right? It's not even as some of these things aren't fundamental problems as much as just card choice problems, and that's totally understandable when you're looking at week one.
Hi, everyone. You all got to see me drinking there. let's go to our deck of the week segment. So you find it funny, it's fine. Let's go on to our deck of the week segment. So every week after we do our training grounds, we actually want to dive deep on one of the decks and kind of talk about, give you a look at it. Like, what is this deck trying to do? What is it? What are the key cards in it? And really, Michael cutting Spencer's argument to ribbons. I don't know. I don't know that's what happened.
I appreciate the pun, though. I mean, we're really, I'm about
I just, puns over. I just need a soundboard. Over everything. I need a soundboard to just, like, click and be like, but anyway.
There you go.
Thanks, Michael.
We did it.
Yeah, Michael, the soundboard hander rocker.
Got to be good for something here.
You're good for some stuff. So this week we want to talk about Marvel and what that deck is trying to do. You know, I kind of talked about how a lot of people are saying it's the biggest winner from the weekend, and it is a big winner from the weekend simply because it's playable. And it is something that I'm going to do a video this week, actually titled Why Marvel is Good for Standard, because I think Marvel gets a bad rap, and it's something that we should definitely be talking about in the format as a piece that's kind of key. Because what happened is people played it at, if you like look at Marvel's history, right? People played it at Pro Tour Kaladesh, and people are like, oh man, this deck's real. It disappears, right? People forget it exists, and then it comes back and becomes the best deck in the format by the end of Kaladesh, right? And when you just ignore a strategy that's obviously very powerful and has some things that you need to look for, that's something that can happen. So we don't want you guys doing that again, and we don't want to do that again, right? So, Michael, what do you think the key cards in some of these Team or Marvel decks are?
I'm going to go out on a real limb here. Do you want to guess what I'm going to say?
Etherworks Marvel?
You got me. So, I mean, this is always sort of, it's the good and the bad, right? Like, this card is so powerful that, I don't know what the splits are on, like, win percentage when you draw one versus when you don't. But this card is, it's really powerful. End up with one
when you draw it versus time, when you don't, I think your win percentage is drastically different.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it. Like the deck is generally pretty bad without it, and pretty great with it, right? But if you want to look at something a little bit less obvious, the card that shows up in literally every iteration is Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot. Yeah. And I would say that card, it's like kind of sneaky good. There are a number of these decks that play some sort of Delirium component, so it's an artifact. It rebuys a Marvel activation because playing it and sacrificing it will get you, I mean, six, but seven with Marvel in play. It also allows you to go cast it turn two, crack it turn three, play and activate Marvel turn four. It's just really good.
So, Wizards of the Coast actually has pillars that they want in each standard format. They want combo/ramp. Aggro, control, and midrange. Those are the things that they want. It doesn't have to be ramp, and it doesn't have to be combo, but it has to be one of the two. And Marvel, they said, is actually the deck that they wanted in that space. So this is a design deck. They knew that Marvel was going to be playable, and they designed the card to be powerful enough to be the card that we used energy for, and to ramp into energy and play big threats.
I'm assuming everyone's played with or against it at this point. It is a card that scares. It should scare you. It certainly scares me.
So I think that some of the other key cards that are really important to the deck are having a threat package. The threat package doesn't matter as much. Right now, it might be Ulamog, Elder Deep Fiend, or it might be Worldbreaker, Ulamog, or it might just be Ulamog, and then a lot of 3-mana and 4-mana cards. But you have to have some combination of threats to hit off of your Marvel, so you have Marvel hits. The good matchups are pretty blatantly obvious. You really want to play against a few things. One of them being mid-range decks, like decks that are really trying to prey upon aggro are really your bread and butter. So you want things like Green-Black Delirium. At the end of last season, it actually had a pretty good Mardu matchup because they've gone so close to the mid-range spectrum, and I don't think that's changed. I crushed Mardu this weekend with the deck, and it didn't feel particularly close because of how close to mid-range they've gone.
Yeah, I would say that matchup particular is pretty dependent on how both players have built their decks.
Yeah.
And I mean, it can probably be anywhere from 30-70 to 70-30, depending on the exact configurations. But
right,
but I definitely agree with like the Black Rain Delirium. That is the dream.
Yeah.
Right. If your opponent is like trying to play Fatal Pushes and Ishkenaz and whatever Grim Flayer, the only way you can actually lose to that deck, in my experience, has been like either you just draw absolutely nothing, or they curve like Grim Flayer into Transgress the Mind kind of action on the play.
So when we go to the bad matches, when you're talking about this deck, I think that there's a key thing. And I think the matchup is specific counterspell decks. So there are configurations that you can make your counterspell deck to have a really good Marvel matchup. And then there are other ways that you could build your counterspell deck that's a really bad Marvel matchup. Because of how you built your deck, I think it's really easy to actually build your control deck to have a good Marvel matchup. It should happen for you.
So what sticks out to you specifically as like cards that tend to indicate you're in for a bad time as a Marvel player?
Spellqueller out of the board is like a huge one. And then main deck negate is pretty key to that, I think. When I see a player that like is their control deck is like maybe five counter spells, that actually doesn't worry me very much. My deck is much more threat dense than that, and I don't have to resolve a lot of my threats. I just have to cast them, and that's a real problem for them. That includes things like, so for me and for a lot of Marvel players, they were on the Elder Deep Fiend clan. So like if you're playing five counter spells, I don't care if you counter my Elder Deep Fiend and get the thing that I sacked, because the next turn is going to be followed up by a Marvel, right? So what's important here is you have to configure a deck where like you have main deck negates, you have things that interact with my threats in a variety of ways. And it's pretty clear when that happens. I also think Nahiri is secretly really good against the deck. And that's pretty important. I think that being able to leave up counter spells and play threats at the same time is really, really important. Because if you can't get to Torrential Gearhulk, you're not going to win the game. Like you have to resolve a couple of Gearhulks to beat the deck.
Right. Okay, so I would agree with that. I know that the time that I've played the most Marvel was the green-red version that had access to Emrakul, and I felt like Emrakul was insane in the control matchup. So losing that hurts your control matchups a lot, I would imagine. Depending on how they're built, right? If you're playing against a bunch of sensors and, you know, a couple of disallows, it's probably not so bad. But when they really are loaded up on the counter magic, it can be pretty tough.
I did a lot of playtesting with the deck, and I actually found that I didn't have that great of a monsters matchup, just green-red beats. I know that other people who were playing green-red beats told me they had a really bad Marvel matchup, and they were getting really lucky against me. And then I even had a player at the PPTQ say that they had a bad Marvel matchup, and I was like, man, I like am having a really tough time beating that deck. So I don't know if that's like the way my deck was configured compared to other Marvel decks, but it certainly didn't feel like a good matchup for me, but it could just be an outlier.
That's interesting. I think a lot of that stuff comes down again to just exact deck construction and
one of the problems is like you can't really reliably kill a lot of green creatures early with Marvel. So because of that, like your interaction package doesn't typically match up very well against them.
That makes sense. Just that like Harness Lightning is really the only spell that's really doing a whole lot of work in some of those matchups.
Yeah, and like before you were playing like Shock, and like maybe now you're playing Magma Spray or something like that, and that just doesn't line up against random green dudes. It just doesn't. Like they don't really care.
Sure, or they get out of the range where that is very effective quickly.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that if you're going to build the deck right now, there are a few things to look at. When you look at the lists, I think that
Bounty of the Luxa. So there are kind of multiple ways to build it, right? You can build it as a control deck that plays the card Aetherworks Marvel.
Yeah,
or you can build
just,
it as a ramp
deck.
Which
is, I think, won a PTQ.
Yeah, the list that won the Magic Online PTQ is pretty interesting. It is playing three Lamogs and a Torrential Gearhulk as its main hits, but it's also playing Glimmer of Genius, which...
Right.
I like pretty well, and Sensor, which I think is a really nice fit in this deck where you can punish someone for trying to curve out on you, but you can also just cycle it.
If you guys remember a long time ago on this podcast, there was a lot of talk about asking us to talk about Temur Tower, right? And we all, I think, tried the deck, didn't like it very much. And all said, I think we all, like you, me, and Casey all said, we tried this deck. If my towers had been Marvels, I might have won every game I played with the deck, right? And I think that a lot of people are starting to see, like, Temur Tower was really specifically good in the last format and became good because of the matchups that the format presented itself, where you might be able to play that a really close shell to that and just jam Ulamogs in it and play Marvel instead.
Yeah, I mean, this list is obviously less counterspell heavy because it doesn't make sense to be as heavy on counterspells when you're in your main deck plan. But it looks like you can like slide in more Gear Hulks and Trackers and some Negates or whatever if your opponent is going to try to go really heavy control on you. I think this deck is like, it strikes a really nice balance for me. I am ambivalent about Bounty of the Luxa, but I have not played a lot with it, so it's not necessarily, I wouldn't say I have the most informed opinion. I'm mostly nervous about modal cards where I don't choose the mode.
Sure. I mean, if you don't get the mana of the turn you want the mana, that's like not that fun. Let's move on. So that's the deck of the week. There's so many different ways you can build Team or Marvel right now. We encourage you guys to check them out. If you're a patron, I actually posted one of the lists in the weekly gauntlet that you can check out and try that out. Play against it. Make sure you're testing against these kind of decks that we're mentioning on the podcast because it will help you win more matches of Magic. So let's go into our training rounds. This week is week one reactions. So, Michael, let's do something we almost never do. And let's just talk about Standard.
Okay.
So we almost never, this is like the week that we do, right? We do week one reactions and Pro Tour reactions. And like, those are our reaction weeks, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. Other than that, we mostly end up with a pretty diverse podcast, but yeah. More outside of Legacy, I guess, where there's some change. This is a good week to be talking about Standard.
Yeah, I did want to mention something that I didn't get to mention. That 8 mana enchantment that stops flyers from attacking. that card seems like the sweetest tech in the world in Marvel. If anyone wants to test it, just throwing that out.
What matchups are you stoked about that in?
I don't know, but it seems sweet. I didn't say it was good. I said it was sweet. If you find a match where it's good, I want to know because I want to play it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough.
You get a worm. You get a worm every turn. Hold up the ground. Worm return. Worm return. Let's move on to our week one reactions. So, you know, what did you look for from this week as far as deck lists go? I misread this question when I answered it, but I'm going to say what I put anyway. I think that Mardu has a lot of room to change. And honestly, so do a lot of other decks. While Mardu dominated, I don't think that it caused a lack of deck diversity. And when I looked at deck lists, what I was really looking for is like, were there cards from Amonkhet that might dramatically change how we think about this deck and how this deck is played today? And there are a few. Like, every time I saw Mardu play a Glorybringer, I was really impressed. And Cut Ribbons just impressed me a lot from that deck, too. Green-Red Energy got some love, and just in the form of like replacing, you know, the bad cards like Pummeler with, you know, good cards like Glorybringer and ramp creatures. And I think that that's a pretty big deal, right? Like, there's a world that Wizards wants to exist for this green-red aggressive energy deck to sit in that space. And I'm looking to find like where key cards fit into the metagame. And the Green God, which we knew was good, and Glorybringer we knew was good, both saw play this weekend. It wasn't a lot of play, but like the fact that it was good enough to get a top 16, that's the information I'm looking for. Like, I typically find that the deck of the Pro Tour is not usually the deck that does well at the SEG. It's usually hidden somewhere else. And I wouldn't be surprised if key components are taken from multiple decks to make up that deck this time, because there just wasn't a lot of time to prepare.
Definitely. When I'm looking at deck lists from this kind of early format event, I am more interested in, like Spencer said, looking at just individual cards that saw play and sort of how things are changing, what direction they're moving in, rather than exactly what won. So like Spencer, I was really impressed with Cut to Ribbons. And that card sort of makes me want to move my Mardu deck to be a little more mid-rangey than it had been in the past. I think sort of solidifies what people had been leaning towards in the four color Saheeli world, but maybe not the exact same set of cards. I don't know how interested I am in Walking Ballista, for example, but trying to move up the curve a little bit, play more like 25 lands rather than 23 or so.
Yeah, Walking Ballista honestly didn't impress me that much this weekend. Like, it felt like a lot of people were using it as like a bad fireball.
Yeah, so that also makes me maybe look at a card like Glintsleeve Siphoner again.
I heard through the CCMTG team testing Grapevine that you were back on that card.
I think that card is, you know, interesting, and if people are not going to play as many Walking Ballistas, that might be interesting. I saw someone playing green-white tokens with no Heart of Kirin, which I kind of liked. I don't know that I would want to play none, but maybe just play less, and then I don't have to make my two drops have three power.
Interesting.
A lot of stuff, like, I'm less interested in, like, saying Mardu dominated the event, because obviously decks that
it was just going to happen.
It didn't need to change. It was already great. So obviously it's going to do well. But if you look at, like, where other decks are sort of seeing fringe benefits or what cards seem good or that kind of stuff, I think you can take away some things that are interesting almost no matter what deck you're interested in.
Oh, this list is really interesting.
Green white tokens list?
Yes.
Yeah, 20 place. I don't know that, like, this is exactly how I would want to build this, but I thought that it was kind of a cool direction.
Yeah.
Scattered Groves also seems great.
The other thing you have to think about is, like, green white tokens right before the SCG was actually dominating the leagues. So, like, I think it was five of the first eight 5-0s. So, you know, they're just things that you need to look for. And as far as deck lists goes, and it's never going to be about, like, what wins an event as much as, like, what is this person learned that I haven't learned that I can take and apply to, like, my deck building and my decision making.
Yeah, so. I think that's a good point, and that's kind of where I am with this format right now.
So what color would you want to play if you were playing aggro next week? So, you know, from what we just talked about, is there a color combination that you're like, yeah, this is the aggro deck I would play?
Well, I really like a lot of these zombies decks. I've been enjoying messing around with them a little bit. They've been tearing up Magic Online the last few days, have a pretty good number of 5-0s. And I think that until people start really playing a lot of, like, Scarab Feast style things, that's a deck I'm pretty interested in.
Yeah, when Matt told me how well that deck was doing, I was like, can you just put the Feast card in your deck and, like, just destroy that idea?
So you kind of can. It depends on how they've built it, though. Some of the lists are pretty straightforward, aggressive lists with just some things that come back sometimes. It depends very much on how you build it. I like the move away from Voldaren Pariah a little bit. I have not been very impressed with that card in the games that I've played. So there's a lot of things to mess around with there, but I think that's where I might start.
Yeah. For me, I mean, you guys know I'm going to try this green-red monsters deck. Like, some of the lists that I've seen even outside of the tournament were just really interesting to me. Like, I think that it was pretty clear to me right when the set broke that I knew I wanted to try a few things. And so the list that took 19th is not as interesting to me as some lists that I've seen that, like, played Channeler Initiate and Servant of the Conduit. Yeah. So, like, you get multiple two drops into your awesome, you know, bigger threats like Bristling Hydra and Glorybringer and Chandra, right? And that's where I want to be.
Yeah, there's a guy who I think finished 46th who was playing Aether Hub, Spire of Industry, Scrounger Ballista, Catacomb Sifter, and then both Glorybringer and Reality Smasher. So if you really want to go deep.
That does sound deep. What place was that?
46th.
All right.
So, but I think that style, like, curving, like, Bristling Hydra into Glorybringer, I mean,
I just think there's a lot of value in finding the best Glorybringer deck. I said it already during the set review. I just think it's the best card in the set. So, like, you know, one thing that Wizards has been tending to do in design and development lately is making sure that their their best cards have decks around them. Like, they just want that to be a thing. And so identifying what the best card is in their eyes is going to lead you down a path to some amount of success.
Sure. No, and I mean, Glorybringer is quite good, and it's good if people continue to play decks with a bunch of creatures. I mean, unless you were playing against really a lot of Ishkenaz, I think that card is just going to be quite good for the foreseeable future.
Yep. Yep, I agree. What deck surprised you the most?
Let's see. Looking at this, there wasn't anything that was like totally crazy off the wall. I was surprised that someone was able to get ninth with Thermal Alchemist. That's a deck that I don't think I would have even considered. But
I have that in my characters file.
I imagine Glorybringer is fairly good there as well.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised by Black Green Delirium. There's just a lot of it in the top 64. And yeah, I mean, I'll take it. I like that deck is playable again. I think that's good
for the format. I do too. It is good for the format. It's a very, I would say, generally skill-intensive, good, fair deck. It's the kind of thing you want to be viable, right? It makes for interesting games of Magic.
Yeah. Also, talking to you when you're over here on my screen is probably not the best. I probably should move your face because I'm like now looking at me looking anyway. Anyway, I do think that Black Green is like a huge part of the metagame that I think we were honestly missing. Like, yeah, I think we were missing it. So,
yeah, I think it's a good deck to help hold Mardu down a little bit at least. And just it really rewards like exact deck building, precise deck building. And I like that.
What do you think is the sweetest thing that saw play this weekend?
Sweetest thing? I thought that the mono black deck that got sixth was sweet.
Okay.
Bone Picker, Walking Ballista, Night Market Lookout. I mean, I don't know what's happening there, but I really appreciate playing two Aether Hubs in a monocolored deck with no colorless requirements just for the Glintsleeve Siphoner. That's great.
All right.
If that doesn't make you happy, nothing's going to.
I mean, seems a little extreme. Honestly, the thing that I thought was super sweet was just like people trying blue-white control with Approach of the Second Sons. Like, I like that. I like that people are at least trying to do it and giving it a shot and trying to innovate, really, with a card that... So, I actually played against the deck this week, and I was pretty in fear of them just jamming it and then untapping, saying go, if I didn't do anything that they cared about, just casting Pull From Tomorrow and then winning the game.
Or, I mean, alternatively, just having a second one in your hand, right?
Yeah, that would work. That would be bad for me, too.
Cast it. Okay, we did it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I always thought that's like the sweetest mode of that card by far, right? That you just, like...
That having the second one is pretty good.
Yeah, because you just, like, hey, jam one. Okay, jam the other one.
Yeah, so that was something that I was impressed with. I'm really glad that the Marvel version of that deck didn't do well, because, like, that's just, like... Such a terrible idea. We're going
too deep down the...
It's like
too deep down the unfun plan.
Well, it's just...
I agree that it sounds bad. I just mean that if I was wrong and what I thought was bad turned out to be good, it would be really disappointing because that would not be fun to play against or with.
Yeah, I don't think that would have... I don't think that would have been good for the format, and I'm really glad it didn't happen at least this week. That doesn't mean it won't happen, but I'm glad it didn't happen. So what would you play tomorrow? So you have a match to qualify you for the Pro Tour tomorrow. What are you playing?
Tomorrow? If I had more time.
Now you gotta go tomorrow. You gotta go tomorrow, man. tomorrow you're trying to qualify for the Pro Tour. You gonna play Mardu?
I am.
All right, Friday. What are you playing?
I think I might play zombies if I had until Friday.
Okay. If it was tomorrow, I'd play Marvel. And if I had until the end of the week, I'd probably find a Delirium list I liked.
Do you like the stuff with... Did you like the Cast Out or the Torrential Gear Hulk? Or what direction speaks to you?
Really liked the White Splash. I think it gives you really good sideboard options. I think Cast Out fits really well into the deck. I really like the White Splash.
Did you get to see Matt cast Dusk to Dawn?
No, but I heard about it. He was sitting next to me when he did it.
Uh-huh.
But I might have been playing against... I don't know.
Sure, you're playing a match you had to try to win and couldn't just watch Matt play instead. Yeah.
Unfortunately. No,
that was our sweetest innovation, I felt like. If you could just like wrath your opponent and then buy back Grimflayer Walking Ballista, that, man, that's got to feel good.
He did. He says that he swept the board, flashed it back, drew three cards that are all great creatures. So, I mean, that seems like a win.
That seems sweet.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, I think that we didn't learn a ton this week compared to typical week ones. I think that Mardu occupied too much space for us to learn as much as we could have. But that doesn't mean that there's not time for the pros to come up with something exciting and really break this format. Now, if a Gideon deck dominates the Pro Tour again, it might not be that fun of a standard, but we'll see. There's a lot to look forward to.
I mean, if you're going to bet on a card, I would bet on Gideon.
So would I. But I also like value. Great. So,
like playing a 5/5 plus a 2/2 for 4?
Yeah. 7/7/4 mana is just like too big. Like,
it's a lot. Yeah, it's no wonder that, you know, he's been in the finals of every single PT he's ever been available for.
Ugh.
This is really good.
All right. Let's wrap this up. So don't forget that you can go to patreon.com/ccmdg to become a patron of the show. Starting at $1 more per month, anything that you donate that you see fit is really appreciated. You set the limit. Anything that you feel like we're giving you is worth, we really appreciate. And it means the world to us. Every time I get that notification, it means a lot. I just went out and got new wristbands. So look forward to those coming in the mail for those who are patrons. And, we really appreciate it. The next goal is obviously cast tokens to get sent out. So we're really close to that. We're like right there. So if you just go donate, we're gonna hit it. So and we can send out cast tokens to everybody. So if you want to see Michael as a goat, this is your opportunity. So
honestly, that just sounds great.
Yeah. In fact, if we hit new patron goal, if we hit $400 per month by GP Vegas, I'll have Michael wear a goat costume on camera during an entire podcast. So
I mean,
it's called being aggressive. It's called being voluntold, Michael. It's called being voluntold. So you can join the conversation by joining our Facebook group. It's just the Constructive Criticism family on Facebook. If you're a patron of $5 a month, you can also join the Constructive Critics Facebook group, become a Constructive Critic. You can also join the Discord channel. I'm going to actually put a link on the website. So if you go to the contact page, I'm going to put one there. You can join the clan by messaging me on MTGO@Spencer13H or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE. And you could also tweet at us with hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. Michael, what is our first hashtag would that be good?
Hashtag would that be good. Hashtag I may have 25 twins. Oh, okay. This is from Scotty. He changed the sign that said ban Sensei's top to say unban Splinter Twin.
That makes sense.
I was more confused before I like read the body of the tweet. It's just the whole like I may have 25 twins thing. It was like, well, I would figure you would know about that.
Yeah.
Seems like something you'd be unlikely to be unsure of if you had 25 twins. But if they're Splinter Twins, I get that you may lose track of your magic collection easier than your siblings.
Fair enough.
Next from Spencer, we have you learn something new every day. Running good. Hashtag adjective. opening an orange and red starburst in a pack of two.
That's the truth. That's running good.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, that's just the definition. So we can move on. Adrian says, solving the starburst dilemma once and for all, hashtag would be good, at Spencer13H, at Casey Bloodworth, at MagicMikeMDG. We just solved it. The definition of running good is opening a red and orange one. So thank you so much, Adrian, for the tweet. Spencer said, I say, wristbands came in, boom, hashtag MTG, hashtag would that be good?
No, hashtag boom? Oh, man, so disappointing.
Do we hashtag boom? I thought we just said boom.
I don't know. Could be a hashtag.
Hashtag could be a hashtag?
Sure. Hashtag boom could be a hashtag.
Chat is saying it's orange isn't even the best one. I let's be real here. There is a definitive Starburst ranking, and it goes orange, red, pink, everything else yellow. That's the end. That's the end of it. That's just how it goes. The Matt says 3-0, 6-0 with this nonsense last night. Two wins were off of Approach of the Second Sun, at Revised Angel, at Trick MTG, hashtag would be good. I don't see a picture associated with this.
All right, I'll click. I'm assuming this is a draft deck, and I assume that he, well.
No, I clicked the tweet. I couldn't find it. Yeah,
I just did too. He accidentally didn't post the draft deck, which is kind of difficult to say how sensible or nonsensical it really was. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it went well. I don't know.
Which would you rather play, Veteran Motorist or Walking Ballista and Marty Vehicles? Hashtag would be good. Right now, I would rather play Motorist. But it's hard because, like, you also want to play Fatal Push. So it's a difficult decision for your mana.
I might say neither. How's that for
innovation? Hashtag
rebellion.
Yeah. Michael, what did you learn this week?
Well, it was interesting to look at all these decks. I learned that this format is going to change a lot. I think Mardu is very good and a totally reasonable deck choice, but I don't think it's nearly as oppressive as just looking at the straight-up results would have you think.
Yeah, I think that I learned that if you make fun of Michael's shower rod enough times, he'll take it down.
You mean my curtain rod? My not shower rod?
Is it a curtain rod that's not for showers?
Yeah, it's a curtain rod to put up curtains like across the window.
Oh, well, there you go. You learn something new every day. I also learned that that was not a shower curtain rod. So, well, thank you everybody for listening. And we'll see you guys all next week.
Thanks for watching, guys. See ya. Magic.